لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على جميع الأنبياء والمرسلين وعلى سيدنا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه أجمعين وبعد. In the name of Allah, most gracious, most merciful, I begin by praising Allah and sending peace and blessings to all the prophets and messengers beginning of time, and upon the last messenger Muhammad, and upon his companions and his family. And I begin by saying the word you have heard so much tonight, As-salamu alaykum wa rahmatullah. Now, for our friends who are here tonight, this means peace be upon you. And it is very important and very significant that we are beginning in peace. And I feel that the concept of peace, the need for peace, and the need for unity amongst the human family is, at this point in time in history, a very critical matter for us. And I believe that eventually it may even decide the fate of human life on this planet. But it is a pleasure for me to be here tonight and to address you. I am coming to you from the indigenous people of America. And maybe you have not met some of the indigenous people before, but many of our people are called Indians, called Red Indians. And my grandmother was from a tribe which is called the Mohawk Indians, settled in the northeastern part of America. Now, people would say, oh, they're Indians, they come from India, but actually Columbus, as you might know, to America on his way to India. And so when he saw the people, he thought he was going to meet the Khan, and so he said, you are Indians, and your complexion is slightly red. So you're the red type of Indian. As you may know, the Indian people who settled in the Americas, coming actually from Mongolia, they are Asian people, who migrated thousands of years ago across the Bering Strait, down into Alaska and into the Americas, populating North America, Central America, and South America. Also, my ancestors are from the Americas. Those who came before Columbus and those who came during the period of slavery. Now, it might be strange for you even to hear people from Africa who came before Columbus, but this is also another fact which has to be rewritten in history. The fact that 180 years before Columbus, and it is a well-known historical fact in America today, that the Mandinka people from the Islamic Empire of Mali crossed the Atlantic Ocean, and the king whose name was Abu Bakr, Mansa Abu Bakr II, crossed with 1,000 ships for supplies and 1,000 ships for men. He landed somewhere in the Caribbean region, and the writings and the traces of the Mandinka or Mandingo culture of West Africa is found in Central America, and also it has been proven that they traded with the Iroquois and Algonquin nation of the Red Indians, and also with the people on the continent of North America. So that I am speaking to you from what you could call the heart of America, from the pulse of America, maybe from an angle that you might not hear over the television and the radio. Many times we are in the habit of a nation by the surface, judging a nation by the class of people who travel and represent that nation. But many times when you go to the actual society and you meet the people, you find something different. So I am speaking to you tonight from the heartbeat of American society. We would say, in North America, we say the grassroots. And the question which is burning in our hearts and our minds today is, what direction will mankind go in the rest of this century, and where will we go in the 21st century? And many of the younger generation in America today are crying out for some sort of change and some sort of direction. And this feeling, which is amongst the youth, goes beyond any particular religion. It goes beyond any particular race. It goes beyond any particular class. there are those ideologies and those ways of life that have taught mankind that we should focus on the material world. You can see it, you can taste it, you can smell it, then yourself with it. But if you cannot, then it is irrelevant. And the youth in society having serious questions. What happens to me when I die? Where did we come from? Where are we going? What is the purpose in life? What direction, what meaning do I have actually to exist? Am I an animal? Am I just existing to breathe, to eat, to sleep? Or do I have a purpose in this creation? This burning feeling and this need for love and need for attention, the need for the connection between the spiritual and the material has driven many of the youth in the West to utter rebellion against their families. You may be aware of a group of people that we call, I think it probably started in England somewhere, but now it's in America, we call it the punks. The punks, dressed in the most bizarre, weird fashion, they try to do the opposite of what is mainstream life. They try to be as strange as possible. And the most strange reaction that they get from you, then they feel satisfied. The more they can incite you, is the more that they feel they are accomplishing their mission. Why are these youth like this? They are not from a special tribe. They are not Martians from the planet Mars. They are people. But they are rebelling against society. They want a new direction. When you meet many of them, they are sensitive. But they're confused. And they're just rebelling and feeling that they want to just tell society no. We also have people who are doing strange things in the name of religion. One group we have in Canada, and this might sound very outlandish, strange to you, but it is spreading in America today. One group, I saw them on the streets of Canada, and they had a cross, and then they had horn around the cross. So I said to the person, I said, how can you put the cross with horns? I've never seen this before. And he said to me, Jesus said, love your enemies. Who is the greatest enemy of mankind but Satan? And so we should love Satan. And so they love him and cherish him and worship him. And their teachings are spreading. Cults are rising up, groups are rising up. And so we find bizarre, strange approaches to religion coming into society. And we have to seriously ask ourselves, what is going on now? What is going on? When you look at American society, you will find that the basic fabric of society is now starting to crumble. Although we have great technological progress, although we have reached a high level of organization, the family structure within society is starting to decay. Divorce is on the increase. If you say that you've been married for 10 years, the people say, 10 years? You actually lived together with somebody for 10 years? This is a miracle. People do not expect to live in a harmonious way, to have children, to live with a traditional family today. They expect argumentation. They expect confusion, and unfortunately also violence. The relationship between the children and the parents is also changing. Many of us who grew up in families, and this goes outside of any particular religion, the children basically respected their father and their mother. The children, or at least they related to their family. Now we are finding that the children are trying to break away from their family. They feel cold inside. They don't feel love. We have in our society a very hard business. Sometimes the father has two jobs. Sometimes the father and the mother are working. And they spend very few real loving moments with their children. We have also what you could call the latchkey children. I know that in this society also, that people in society, families, are also facing this crisis. We also have children who have the keys to the house. And when they go home in the afternoon, nobody is there to serve them a meal. Nobody is there to give them the attention and the comfort that they need. While they are going to bed at night, many times they cannot see their father. Sometimes even they cannot see their mother when they are going to bed. This is having an effect upon the children. They want to break away from the family. They want to rebel. Also, in the society, people are turning to drugs. We have a new drug which you are probably aware of, coming from the cocaine. It is called crack. It is now they are smoking the cocaine. And they are reaching the level now that it is epidemic. And if you are living in certain parts of New York City and Chicago, it is dangerous to walk the streets in certain parts of the city during the day. They will rob you in broad daylight. And so this fear and this confusion is stalking the land. People are dying on the highways. And they say that the greatest killer, or the greatest cause of the accident, is alcohol consumption. People are dying from heart attacks, stress, the pressure of working two or three jobs, the pressure of trying to succeed, trying to reach the pinnacle, competing against your brother or your sister, competing against other nations and races, is having an effect upon the heart of the people. Eating too much. In some parts of America, we are eating 5 or 6 meals a day. We have meals in the morning. We have meals at midnight. Some people get up from their sleep and they eat meals. We are taking in so much and not giving its body its real due. You can see that this inside part of the society now is under attack. The inside part is decaying, it is crumbling, and there is a need for a way of life that promotes clean living, that teaches its followers to avoid intoxication, that teaches its followers to eat from the good things, that teaches its followers that the family should be together, that teaches its followers also that they should take time during the day and they should pray. Prayer was stressed by all of the prophets. Fasting was stressed by all of the prophets. In our society also today, we have a very strange phenomenon, and I hope and pray it is not spreading here, but probably it has. We have men who are trying to be women, and women who are trying to be men. This has caused a terrible effect. It is known as acquired immunity deficiency syndrome. The very mercy that Almighty God, Allah, has given the body has been lifted. The ability to throw off the immune system is being broken apart because of wrong functioning, because of going against the natural order which is set up by the Creator. Now, unfortunately, this disease is spreading to the heterosexual community, to all different parts of society. And especially those people who are using drugs and those people who are involved with people who are using drugs. And so you can see, there is a definite need for some new direction for the internal makings of society. There is some need for a way of life. This is the unity of the family and traditional morality. Now in Canada we have people called the No Generation. This is something maybe is particular to Canada. These young people, they said no. They didn't say no like the punks. They said no in a more balanced way. They said, no, we don't want this value system that you have. We don't want these practices. We don't want loose living anymore. We want traditional values. But we want traditional values in a modern setting. Don't take us back 1,000 years and make us sit under a tree. Don't take us back 1,000 years and put us on a camel riding through the desert. Don't take us back 1,000 years by the water. We want to have traditional values, but we want it in a modern context. We want to be able to function in society and still maintain some with our relationship with other people. This no-generation concept is spread throughout the society. And people now are reanalyzing religion. What is the real message of religion? What does the prophets really mean when they talk to people in different parts of the world and at different times? This is the question that I am posing tonight. In the outside environment, as you probably know, we are also, as a human family, and this goes beyond Muslims, beyond Christians, beyond Buddhists, beyond Hindus, we as a human family are facing an environmental crisis. In Toronto just recently, there convened of scientists who came from different parts of the world. And the scientists brought all of their information and they came together and they agreed facing a crisis, international crisis. Some people are now calling it the greenhouse effect. That we have destroyed or are destroying the ozone layer. That layer of projective gases, which is 15 to 40 kilometers around the Earth, we are destroying it by solution. We're destroying it by the gases coming up from the automobiles in our modern society. And because of this, now the weather is changing. We had a very hot summer last year in Canada. It was so hot, at some point, I thought I was in Arabia. And they say that actually maybe one Allah knows best, that maybe even the snow might fall here. And we might be the ones that you come to during the winter months for your vacation. The climate is changing. But unfortunately, it is having a severe effect upon life. We have recorded in America some of the worst droughts in history. The thing which is very strange, which is striking me, is that all of these incidents that are happening, you can say to a certain extent, it's the worst. They say in America today, maybe you're not aware of what happened in America this year, but we have the worst drought in recorded history. The Mississippi River was so low that the scientists were considering draining the Great Lakes. You know the Great Lakes that are there in Mississippi? It is like the Amazon of North America. They were considering draining the Great Lakes. The Canadian government had to intervene to stop them from draining the lakes. If they had done this, it would have been an ecological attack. The fires are still burning in California. It is the worst recorded set of fires in the history of North America. We also face, and many scientists believe, it may also be an outcome of this greenhouse effect, we also face the worst hurricane in recorded history. The appearance of this hurricane which swept through the Caribbean region. The Caribbean, environmentally, is very similar to Malaysia. Very similar. It is a tropical environment. And the hurricane swept through the area at 200 miles per hour. They have never recorded wind moving at this speed. They say that in the island of Jamaica, when this hurricane struck, whole villages were being lifted up. They say that certain parts of the island looked like Hiroshima and Nagasaki after the dropping of the atomic bomb. Destruction and the sugarcane and banana crops were destroyed in a number of islands throughout the Caribbean. Also, we are facing in different parts of the world flooding. We are facing flooding. In the Sudan, you may know in Khartoum, the capital of the Sudan, the capital was almost three quarters underwater. In Bangladesh, with the ice melting from the Himalayas and pouring down, coming down through the major rivers, as you know, it is the worst flood, it is the worst natural disaster of the century. People are still facing a crisis within that society, trying to bring human life back to a normal pace, trying to survive after the disease and pestilence has stalked the land. And so the environment is turning against us. And man, for the last 500 years or so, have tried to conquer nature. The idea about nature was not that we should live with nature, not that we should use nature to enhance life, but we should conquer nature. We should corral it. We should manufacture things even that might harm nature, as long as we are making money, as long as we are making progress. And now the natural order of things is speaking back to us. In America we have 230 million tons of garbage every year. The people don't know what to do with the garbage. They try to ship it to West Africa to give it to the poor people of Africa. But the people, fortunately, well, praise it to Allah, the people found out what was happening and stopped them from doing this. But they're stuck with a problem. They have miles and miles of garbage. It is poison. And it is destroying the fabric of the quality of life. We have in Canada and in America what is called acid rain. Even when it rains out, rain that is a mercy to mankind, rain that is a mercy to the environment, is now cursing the environment. The rain is coming down with poison in it. And so even when the rain falls, we are being affected. In California, we have what is called smog. I hope that you have not been struck with smog yet. But if you have millions of automobiles, the more automobiles you have, if you have a heavy cloud cover, then this smog can attack you. And so certain times during the year, they tell you, you're driving at about 8 o'clock in the morning or so, and the news comes on and it says, smog. Smog alert. Don't jog. Don't play athletic events. Try not to breathe too much. Because the more you breathe, is the more poison that you take into your system. If you have a heart condition, if you have asthma, they even tell you stay in the house. So although we have Hollywood, although we have the great Disneyland and the great progress of California, at certain points, it actually turns into a valley which is filled with poisonous gas. So all of this can show us clearly that we are in need of new direction. We are in need now to come together as a human family, to reanalyze the lifestyle that we have been following, to reanalyze the direction that we are going in, to reanalyze the budgets that our governments have. Many of the governments have more money involved in the military, more money involved in weapons of destruction than they do to save life or to enhance the value of life. It is needed on all levels of society, from the governmental level to the regular social family level, for us to reanalyze which way are we going. I believe strongly that direction is amongst us. That there have been prophets and messengers who have come from the beginning of time and who have brought direction for all of mankind. This direction is called in the Arabic language Deen. It says in Quran, Inna Deena Indallahi Islam. That surely the way of life with the Creator Allah is Islam. Now one might say, okay, to say Islam, all right. We're not Arabs. We're not Malays. We're not Pakistanis. We come from other cultures. This is not fair. You're trying to say that one prophet, he has all of the credits. What happens to the other prophets? What happens to the other ways of life? But actually, I want to give you a new meaning tonight. A new meaning which is an old meaning to Muslims, but which even Muslims today have to understand in a better way. And that is that the word Islam in the Arabic language means submission to the will of the Creator. This is what it means. And Islam is a qualitative term. That means that any individual, the practitioner of Islam, we would call a Muslim. That person is a person who has certain qualities. It is not restricted to any race. It is not restricted to any time period. It is not restricted to any particular language. But it is the message of all of the prophets, all of the guided ones who have come from the beginning of time. It says in Quran, وَلَقَدْ بَعَثْنَا فِي كُلِّ أُمَّةٍ رَسُولًا أَنْ اعْبُدُوا اللَّهَ وَاجْتَنِبُوا الطَّاغُوتَ. The Quran speaks to us and it says, and surely we have sent to every nation a messenger that they would worship God, that they would worship the Creator Allah, and that they would stay away from false deities. So we believe from this that prophets came to China, prophets came to India, prophets came to Africa, prophets came to the Americas, prophets came to every nation and tribe, prophets came to Europe, prophets came to every folk culture at one point in time. But the wisdom of Almighty God, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, we find that in the great books, the Torah, the Psalms, the Gospel sent to Jesus, peace be upon him, and the Quran, we see the emphasis upon the Middle Eastern area of the world. It is used as an example for all nations because the Middle East is a melting pot. It is an area where all of the extreme cultures combine. It is an area where you can find people of every complexion, of every shape, of every culture. It's a crossroads point. And so, the bulk of the prophets that we have mentioned in the scriptures have come somewhere in that region as a sign to all mankind. But we believe, and it is found in the scriptures, that prophets came to other nations. And if you look into the folk culture of all peoples, you will find at one point a person came speaking about the Great Spirit. A person came speaking about the Creator. In Mandarin, I was told that the word Shangti, it refers to the Creator. You find in ancient Egyptology, you find that there was a pharaoh who was called Akhenaten. Akhenaten taught the people not to bow down to idols, not to make many gods, Osiris or Isis, but that they should worship the power behind the sun, not Ra, not the sun itself, but the power behind the sun, the power which energizes the universe. This type of teaching, this unity of your concept of the deity, this is the essence of the message of Islam. And so Islam is something that did not start with Muhammad ibn Abdullah, peace and blessings be upon him. It started when the first men walked the face of the earth. And it continued and it manifested itself at different points in history, in all nations and all tribes. So when we talk about deen, when we talk about the way of life, in order to submit to the natural order, we are talking about a way of life that was consistent to all the prophets, that was taught by all of the representatives of the Creator, however you would like to call his name. If you like to call him Yahweh, if you like to call him Jehovah, if you like to call him Allah, the basic essence of the message was that we should strive to submit our will to the Creator. Be part of the natural order. Don't break away from the natural order. If you look at the ants, look at the bees, look at the plants, they submit to the natural order. You don't have to go into an ant colony and tell the worker ants, look, you ants should organize a union so you can get your rights with the queen. You don't have to tell them that. The queen, all of her piety and all of her importance, she plays her role in the colony. She oppresses the other ants. She has her position with her drones. And the workers function in harmony. You don't need to have an overthrow by the proletariat of the bourgeoisie class within the ant colony. The ants follow natural order. You don't have to send them a book. You don't have to send them a messenger. But mankind is different. We can submit to the natural order, or we can go against it. We can do things, and some people are doing things today that I'm sure even the animals are ashamed to look at. Maybe some of the animals would ask themselves, what type of creation is this? What are these things? Don't they know that we're supposed to function in the natural order? Don't they know there is a female cow, there is a male cow? I mean, let the male cow stay with the females. Why are they chasing the other males? I'm sure they are shocked when they see the things that people are doing today. So this submission to the natural order, this is what we mean when we say Islam. We're not talking about something which is restricted to a certain race of people. We're not talking about something that is restricted to a certain color of people or a certain class of people. But we're talking about something which is natural to all people. And that is that we naturally recognize that there is a force. There is an intelligent force which is greater than us. However you want to call it. Some people even call it nature. They say it's nature. Some people might even say it's dialectical materialism. Whatever they might say, they know that there is something of them. Something which is intelligent, something which is moving society. One of the announcers, or one of the newsmen, when Hurricane Gilbert was raging through the Caribbean, he made a very significant comment. He said, these hurricanes serve as a check to mankind. Because when the hurricane comes, there's nothing you can do. There's nothing you can do. The most you can do, maybe now they can fly inside the eye of it and they can measure it. You know, they board up their houses, but there's nothing you can do to stop it. So it checks you when you start to think that you're really powerful. When you start to think that you have control over all things. Then the hurricane comes. And it breaks apart everything that you have. And there's nothing you can do but pick up the pieces and try to build again. So all people intrinsically know that there are forces in this universe that are greater than them. This is a message that was taught consistently by all of the great ones, all of the prophets who came from the beginning of time. So amongst the prophets who came, one by the name of Ibrahim alayhi salam. In English we call him Abraham. He is a very significant prophet. And in his life we see the coming together of great civilizations. Ibrahim alayhi salam came from Iraq. He came from the civilization of the Tigris and Euphrates. That is considered to be by many one of the oldest, if not the oldest, society in the history of man. He came from the Tigris and Euphrates region, refusing to submit to the idols. He traveled across Damascus and down to Palestine and Egypt. And he also took as his wife, his maid, was given to him as a maid, we call Hajar, or in English we say Hagar. She bore Ishmael. She was coming from Egypt, the other great civilization that some people consider to be the first major civilization. And so in Ibrahim alayhi salam is a coming together of the nations. Also Ibrahim, the Quran says, Ibrahim was an ummah. He was a nation unto himself. That he was so strong that although everybody around him was going against the will of God, he wanted to submit to God. And it's very important for us today, and especially we have our friends here today from different faiths, to understand the complete history of Ibrahim alayhi salam. We are aware of the ministry or the part of his life that came through his wife Sarah. And from Sarah came his heart, Isaac. And from Isaac came Jacob, who was known as Israel, or Israel. From him sprung prophets. Prophets who are well known to the people in Western society. They sprung from him Joseph and Moses and David, Solomon. From his loins came Zachariah and came Yahya, came John, And also came Jesus, peace and blessings be upon him. All of these great ones coming through that side of his family related to Isaac. But the other side of his family, that story is not so well known to people. But surely Ibrahim, alayhi salam, peace be upon him, he was a messenger of God. And he was a pure person. He was an upright person. And he submitted to the will of God. He structured his life around the commandments given to him by the Creator. In part of his life, it is recorded that he went to an empty, desolate valley. And the valley was known as Bekka, and later on became known as Mecca. He settled in that valley with his wife Hagar and the son Ismail or Ishmael. They settled in the valley, and Ishmael and Ibrahim built the house known as the Kaaba, the cubicle-shaped house. He built it for the worship of one God. He built it for the message that came through his heart, came through Isaac, and it came down in the children of Israel. House for the worship of one God. His son Ishmael married from the Arab tribe of the south named Jurhum. And from them sprang a family called Quraysh. And from the loins of this family came the Prophet Muhammad ibn Abdullah, peace and blessings be upon him. And so his family is part of the family tree of Ibrahim alayhi salam. His message was the same. The belief in one God. The belief in a hereafter, in a life after death. The belief that our actions in this life are not in vain. That if we do good, if we have patience, even in the trials, that one day we will see the fruit of our labor. The belief that we should pray. We should express our feelings and our thanks to the Creator. The belief that we should fast, that we should not continue to fill ourselves and fill our bodies with food, but the past. And the belief that we should not live under oppression. These are some of the teachings that came through the Prophet Muhammad ibn Abdullah, peace and blessings be upon him. And it was the continuation of the message. And I believe that this beautiful brotherhood of prophets and their message is needed today. If Muhammad and Jesus and Moses were here tonight, I believe firmly they would embrace each other. They would not see each other as enemies, but they would embrace each other and know that they are part of one brotherhood who came representing the same Creator of the heavens and the earth. And so this theme is what is needed today. Some people will say, okay, but this religion, we don't need religion. Religion is what you do on the weekend. Okay, what do we do during the week? This is a misunderstanding of the term religion. That idea of religion that is against science, that idea that church is separated from the state, that when in Rome you do as the Romans do. On Sunday you submit to the Creator, on Saturday you submit to the Creator, or Friday. And during the week, you do what you want to do. This concept is not the concept brought by the Prophet. The concept brought is that deen is a way of life. It is how you relate to your family. How your family relates to other families. How your community organizes itself politically, economically. How do you pray? How do you give your inheritance? How do you eat? What do you eat? All of these aspects of life are all part of the original message of deen, or a way of life which is all-encompassing. All-encompassing. And this way of life, this deen, I believe, we are sincerely in need of today. We are in need of people who have balance. One of the consistent factors or qualities you see in the Prophets is that they were balanced people. Not extremists in one direction or the other. In the Quran, it talks about ummatun waqafa. He talks about the middle nation, that those who submit to the Creator are a middle nation. And in this middle nation, we are not an extreme to one side or the other. For instance, when it comes to the relationship of men and women, some ways of life tell you, annihilate your desire, kill your desire, disregard your desire. Other ideologies or ways of life tell you, submit to your desire, do anything you like to do, be free, as they say. Do anything that comes to your mind. But the middle role of the Prophet is that you realize that you have desires. We have desires to eat. We have sexual desires, but these should be put in the proper perspective. It should be fulfilled, but it should be fulfilled in a clean and wholesome way, in a way which is productive to society, which does not destroy society, and which does not destroy the honor of the people in the society. Not to degrade the woman, not to degrade children, but to raise up the quality of life and to be modest in our relationship between each other. This is the message of the Prophet. It does not mean necessarily that we hide in a monastery, because we are living in this world. And those who are hiding in monasteries are finding problems today, because the level of technology today, the level of communication today, is such that everybody has to live with each other. Maybe in the past, you might have never had a chance to meet a person who has come from a background like my background. I may have never had a chance to come this far. It might take me 2 or 3 months to get here before, some centuries ago. I had to live in a part of the world before I could even get here. But now with mass communication, with travel being done on such a high level, I'm able to come in a few hours, just fighting off my jet lag, but able to meet you and to talk with you and to experience with you, and then to return to my country in a matter of hours. So we are actually what you could call a global village, the one big village now. It's not me with my wall and my fortress, looking over at you on your mountain with your wall and your fortress. Maybe we meet down in the valley and we make an agreement. Or maybe I might come over and attack your mountain, and then if I beat you, I'll take over your mountain for a few generations, and then you'll fight me back and then come and take my mountain over. That period of time, this is a backward mentality. What we need today are people who are looking for solutions to the future, who have tolerance. Who have tolerance of other people's beliefs. Who have tolerance and understanding of other people's way of life. But who are honest with themselves. Who are honest with themselves. And when they see the message of the Prophet, when they see the truth, that they respond to the truth. And that they are not restricted because of what their fathers did. They are not restricted because of what their race is known to do. Or their people who speak their language are known to do. They are not restricted by their class, that we are upper class people and we cannot